might as well close the store. They used to call us working class, but workers not working anymore. We're not a working. We're not a working.
This hour of programming is brought to you in part by Central Illinois Jobs with Justice, a coalition of union and community groups working for economic justice and workers' rights. Central Illinois Jobs with Justice holds regular meetings on the third Saturday of every month at 9:30 a.m. at Channing Murray Foundation, 1209 West Oregon, Urbana. For more information, visit www.centralillinoisjobswithjustice.org. Programming on the World Labor Hour is supported in part by listeners of WEFT and Decatur attorney Bill Faber, who believes that the mission of the law is the safety of the people. Bill Faber proudly supports the World Labor Hour. The World Labor Hour is supported in part by listeners of WEFT and by the AFL-CIO of Champaign County. The AFL-CIO represents the interests of more than 7,000 workers in Champaign County and more than 13 million workers nationwide. Recognizing that strong workers build strong communities, the AFL-CIO is proud to support community radio in East Central Illinois. The Graduate Employees Organization Union, GEO, at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign strives to not only democratically represent graduate employees, but also to give solidarity and support to other unions, organizations, and workers engaged in the struggle for social justice both on and off campus. The GEO is proud to support the World Labor Hour on WEFT Community Radio. The Campus Faculty Association at the University of Illinois advocates for academic freedom, shared governance, and a strong faculty voice on campus. CFA is proud to support Community Radio and the Labor Hour in support of strong unions. You can learn more about the CFA by visiting cfaillinois.org.
Howdy, folks. This is the September 29th, 2016 edition of the World Labor Hour. I'm Bill Gorell. We have Dave Johnson in the studio, and we have a couple of guests coming up later. I want to remind you that you're listening to WEFT Champaign, Illinois, 90.1 FM, www.weft.org, located in the heart of the occupied Illiniwek Nation. And what do you got, Dave?
Okay, we got a couple of guests. We have Kadeem Fuller and Evelyn Reynolds of our local Black Lives Matter chapter coming up here soon. They're here in the studio with us. And starting around 12 noon, we're going to have another live guest in the studio, two actually, from the immigration, local Champaign-Urbana immigration forum to talk about wage theft, especially involving undocumented immigrant workers. And let's let everyone know the views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of the station manager, board of directors, or of Prairie Air Incorporated.
Yes, that is true. The all-important disclaimer, we wouldn't want anybody to get confused and think that the board of directors agrees with us. Maybe some of them. Or maybe all of them. We don't know. Well, got some stories there today.
Yes, indeed. A lot's been happening, over the last week. There's been a United Nations report highlighting the U.S. history of slavery, segregation, and continuing racial terror. That goes on to say the colonial history, the legacy of enslavement, racial subordination, the segregation, and racial terrorism and racial inequality in the U.S. remains a serious challenge. There's been no real commitment to reparations and to truth and reconciliation for people of African descent, despite substantial changes since the end of the enforcement of Jim Crow laws and the fight for civil rights. Ideology ensuring the domination of one group over another continues and negatively impact the civil, political, economic, social, and cultural rights of African Americans today. There are 21 more people arrested at the Dakota Access Pipeline protest in St. Anthony, North Dakota. They were arrested throughout the day on Wednesday, September 28, at two construction sites near St. Anthony. The Morton County Sheriff's Department said the protesters were arrested for various offenses ranging from resisting arrest, criminal trespass on private property, and possession of stolen property, whatever that might be. Okay, and then there was Charlotte, things are going on there still. Local and state activists called Monday for the resignation of Charlotte Police Chief Kerr Pertney and Charlotte Mayor Jennifer Roberts to resign as the city's latest round of tension between police and the black community moves into its second week. At a Monday news conference held by Charlotte Uprising, a coalition that emerged during last week's protests, speakers said both officials have failed to protect the city's African-American and working-class citizens, and they withheld information about two fatal shootings that happened just last week. A lot of things have been going on around the country as far as an unprecedented historic prison work stoppage. A group of guards in an Alabama prison went on strike this weekend out of solidarity with inmates protesting overcrowding and unjust labor practices. Strikes and work stoppages have rolled through the nation's prisons throughout the 45th anniversary of the Attica uprising early in the month. On September 9th, inmates at the William C. Holman Correctional Facility in southern Alabama went on strike for at least 24 hours, refusing to show up for their work assignments, and it's been documented there's been over 40-some prisons throughout the United States and 20-some states that have started, that have or are currently still protesting. Saw a little special on Democracy Now! About this, and one of the prisoners that was actually in solitary was on the phone talking about how it was really amusing from stories he heard from other prisoners about how the warden and the assistant wardens had to go serve make and serve breakfast to the inmates, and that, of course, you could tell that they weren't used to doing that work. And anyway, seems that 4 years after it began requiring TV stations to upload their records of political ad sales to a central government website, the Federal Communications Commission maintains a record-keeping system that makes finding out who an ad sponsor is feel like a treasure hunt. In 2012, the Federal Communications Commission approved a rule requiring broadcast stations in the largest markets to upload the files showing who bought time for political ads.
Oh, Dave, but, yes. You segue very smoothly between those two stories, and I just wanted to get in that if you want to hear more about this prison labor strike, I suggest that you go to radioforall.net, that is with the numeral four, and look for The Final Straw. It's an anarchist program. I believe it's out of Asheville, North Carolina. And they've pretty much exclusively been covering the prison strike, I believe, for about the last three episodes, at least since the strike started, September 9th. And they also have the commentary of one of my favorite anarchist commentators, Sean Swain.
Okay. All right. And lastly, it looks like an unarmed black man has died after being shot by a police officer at El Cajon in Southern California, a suburb of San Diego. On Tuesday, the local police department said appealing for calm as local media reported crowds had gathered the scene of the shooting. The death comes less than 2 weeks after black men in Charlotte, North Carolina, and Tulsa, Oklahoma were shot dead by the police, sparking protest. In Charlotte, rioting prompted the authorities to impose a state of emergency. To add that there seems to be quite a few witnesses who saw the police shooting of this unarmed black man, and they said that the man, who I believe was of African descent, had his and his sister had called reporting that he was having a mental health incident and that they needed some assistance, that he put his he had his hands in the air and the police shot him five times, and there was, I guess, a crowd of people that actually witnessed that.
Why?
That seems to not appear in the corporate media accounts.
Yeah, well, you know, something needs to be done is maybe police should be there, but there, when you get a call about a mental health issue, I think there should be mental health professionals there.
Well,
you know,
yeah.
Like, yeah, EMTs and such, as well as the police, you know, people who know what's going on. I mean, you know, there's an old saying, Dave, there's no situation that can't be made worse by calling the police.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that just appears to be, the situation here right now. Dave, you know something? There's a fair number of people live in this town and also tend to work at a local truck bumper factory who are from the Democratic Republic of Congo. And I was just reading a interesting article the other day by it's on walkingbutterfly.com, and it's titled, "When you kill 10 million Africans, you aren't called Hitler." And it's about King Leopold of Belgium.
Mm-hmm.
And the area that is we know generally as the Congo was actually a private estate.
A private estate.
It was, I mean, this is beyond imperialism or colonialism.
Mm-hmm.
It was, the, And here's how Wikipedia explains it. Leopold was the founder and sole owner of the Congo Free State and all its people. I guess the only person it was free for was for him. Mm-hmm. And basically what it was a massive genocide, to force people in under definitely slave-like conditions, if not outright, well, it says he owned all the people there.
He owned all the people.
To tap rubber trees.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, it was one of the most horrendous regimes ever. Like it says, it's 10 million people, not 6 million people, but these 10 million people were in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't really count, except for one person, and that was, Mark Twain.
Okay.
And I don't have it up right now, but he wrote like a 48-page pamphlet on this. It is just some wicked reading, too. Yeah.
He was, Mark Twain was part of the Anti-Imperialist League.
That's true.
Yeah.
But, I mean, this is just amazing, and it's mm-hmm. something that's not,
they don't
well
teach
known
that in
at all.
High school history classes, it seems, probably, a few college history classes. But anyway.
Oh, by the way, mm-hmm. I forgot, Newt Gingrich got his PhD at Tulane University, a university that definitely has lost my respect,
mm-hmm.
based on a dissertation that extolled the virtues of the educational system that King Leopold brought to the Congo.
Wow.
Amazing. Newt Gingrich has to be the most cynical person ever.
Yeah. Okay, I'd like to introduce our guests now. We have Kadeem Fuller and Evelyn Reynolds of the local Black Lives Matter chapter here in Champaign-Urbana, Illinois. Welcome to Labor Hour.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Okay, so maybe you could just each tell us just a short little background about yourselves, and then we could go into basically why Black Lives Matter started nationally and what compelled you guys to start a chapter here in Champaign-Urbana.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Evelyn Reynolds, and I am an organizer with the Black Lives Matter Champaign-Urbana chapter. And I've been organizing with the chapter since its inception a little over a year ago, and was doing some organizing with Built Programs Not Jails and CUCPJ, the Citizens for Peace and Justice groups a couple years before that. I'm also a professor of sociology at Parkland College, and I've been living in Champaign for nearly 7 years now.
Okay.
How's it going, family? I'm Kadeem. I am also organized with Black Lives Matter, Champaign-Urbana. I do a lot of work with prison abolition. That's something that I keep near and dear to my politics. I'm originally from Alabama, so the Free Alabama Movement and the prison worker strike that started in Holman is something that, I've been watching since it kind of started. But I've been in the Champaign-Urbana area for about 2 years now, and I was with Black Lives Matter a couple months after it was started by Evelyn Reynolds and the other organizers that kind of started the chapter.
Okay. And I guess just for those listeners that might not know why Black Lives Matter was formed nationally, do you want to just give a little background on that?
Well, the Black Lives Matter network that we are a part of that has the chapters, and there's over 40 chapters now. That began in 2013 after the acquittal of George Zimmerman for the murder of Trayvon Martin. The Black Lives Matter movement that we see that includes many individuals outside of the network really kicked off with the Ferguson uprising. So I definitely, want to give credit where credit is due. That galvanized our society, I think. So much respect and much inspiration from the folks in Ferguson.
Yeah, I think it's critically important that Evelyn talked about it, that our movement is not a moment, it's a movement. The fact that we have this galvanizing war cry that Black Lives does matter in a white supremacist capitalistic society, where we affirm the rights of, we affirm the humanity and the right to live for Black women, also queer and trans Black people. I think it's something that that Black Lives Matter has held near and dear, and that's something that we honor that. We honor the whole spectrum of Blackness. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, of course, semantics is important. And you know, a lot of times, you know, with slogan, like say with Black Lives Matter, sometimes there's a lot of misunderstanding. And of course, people out there that, I guess you could call them our, adversaries or our enemies, love to twist things and everything. And of course, one of the things that shortly after the slogan Black Lives Matter came out, a lot of people come out with All Lives Matter. And, you know, it's just strange because, you know, there was a reason for stating that. I mean, of course, we all agree, all in the general sense of things, of course, every life out there matters. But the reason Black Lives Matter was is because, correct me if I'm wrong, is that you look at the data and see all the various things going on, this exponential increase in police murders, and I'm going to call them what they are, murders, because my definition of murders, the only reason somebody has a right to kill another human being is in self-defense of themselves or their family or friends.
Just self-defense of others.
Yeah, but killing an unarmed person, that's murder. I don't care how right, you try to justify right. it. And African-Americans and Native Americans, but especially African-Americans that have been taking a vast proportionally high number of these police murders. I mean, especially when you compare that the African-American population in the United States is, what, about 15%?
Yeah.
And about, I'd say probably, I don't know what the exact figure is, but it has to be well over half of the police murders of unarmed civilians have been African-American people.
And, yeah, David, I would take it even a step further beyond just police murders, but state-sanctioned police murders. The fact that you have so many police officers getting off on these murders. So, you have a justice system that systemically protects cops from the black death that they engage in.
Mm-hmm. And just for some people out there that aren't African Americans, don't think that this doesn't affect you, because there's also been, you know, Hispanic people people of European descent, white people, that have also been killed by the cops, you know. But black people have been taking the biggest hit on this. And, you know, the way I'm a member of the Bill as well as a member of the IWW, the Industrial Workers of the World, and one of the slogans of that union, that was one of the first unions to not discriminate against women or minorities, is that an injury to one is an injury to all. And those who are being affected the most are the ones that had the greatest need, and the ones that we should be supporting and working with. So, okay, I guess, do you want to just, I guess I can just turn you guys loose, so to speak, to kind of maybe talk about some things you want to focus on for the listeners out there. We've got listeners out there, not just in Champaign-Urbana, but nationwide, and even some regular listeners in the UK, Canada, and Ireland. So with that in mind, maybe you want to talk about, you know, things, whatever you want to talk about, what you came today to impart to the listeners.
And I also want to just add that, you know, Black Lives Matter is very much focused and concerned about, you know, police murders and state-sanctioned violence in that way, but also expanding what violence means and what violence looks like. And so we're also very concerned with, you know, the violence that takes place in schools, within our educational system, the racist violence that takes place there, and also concerned, you know, with the microaggressions that we face each day in our society and the hostility and prejudice that black folks face in our society. And so thinking about labor, you know, that's a big part of this equation as well, because it's one of the age-old ways that, you know, black folks have been oppressed and depressed in our society, is this continuous oppression by labor, you know, lack of access to well-paying, stable jobs that have longevity and benefits and things like that are things that we've been largely excluded from for centuries, and it continues to happen today, where, you know, black people continue to make the list as far as the U.S. labor statistics when it comes to multiple job holders.
Yes, and that's
to low-wage laborers.
Well, and that's with the American labor movement officially never being really all that behind black Americans, even though some there were early unions, you know, like the IWW, mm-hmm. The Knights of Labor even.
Yeah.
They accepted black members, and, of course, there were a lot of laws in the Jim Crow times where you could not have blacks and whites could not meet in the same room, same
yes.
building.
Exclusion
yes.
from labor unions.
Right, and although things picked up, you know, later on, I do have to say that the unions in the United States in general have not been in the forefront of the civil rights struggle.
Yeah, I mean, black folks have been excluded from labor unions, and they were. I mean, thinking of the Pullman, you know, porters, labor strikes, and how, you know, that really started the Labor Day holiday mm-hmm. that we have today. And thinking about the ways that black people have been excluded from those unions, and had to create their own unions. You know, they did in the late 1860s, created their own unions. And these are things that are kind of interesting when we have these Labor Day celebrations to kind of reflect back on that.
Well, the Pullman porters were instrumental, though, in the civil rights struggle from very early on, getting the basis for it developed, because they were people who traveled the country, and they could spread the news. And apparently the history shows that they were very much into developing what happened. I even remember, Dave, when I was a child, riding on a train to California with those porters.
Really?
Okay. Yes. Mm-hmm. From Union Station in Chicago. You could get on a train in Monticello and go to Chicago and then get on a train and go to California.
There's a film done by, what's his name? Mario Van Peebles, called 10,000 Black Men Named George.
Right. It was shown on Showtime several years ago.
We show that on the Labor's View TV.
You did.
Usually in February, Black History Month. And it's a really good show. I mean, it's a drama, of course, but it really shows what they had to do. It took them over 10 years to actually organize their union. I mean, they faced great obstacles.
Yeah, so that's available on DVD then?
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, there you go. All right.
And Black folks make up the highest percentage of, you know, folks that are favorable to union
employment. Right.
I mean, we top the list, and so it's just ironic. Yeah. You know?
And, you know, I'll tell you my own personal experience. I'm working in over the course of my lifetime in two different unions, a Carpenters Union and a public school support staff union. Is my experience with workers in general that most, not all, but most African Americans are much better union people than in general. I mean, for their percentages, they get it. I mean, they get the, you know, master-slave, boss-worker relationship. And it has a lot, I'm sure, to do with the history of African-American people in this country, you know. So, I mean, just a little, you know.
Well, rugged individualism never really didn't do Black folks very well in this country.
And wasn't Ida B. Wells, didn't a lot of her research and stuff find out that a lot of the lynchings in the South, going, you know, basically from the Reconstruction up into even the 1950s, had to do, when they really dug into it and looked behind the excuses, that it really was more often than not labor disputes.
Exactly. Business owners, right? Yeah. Especially black business owners within Jim Crow. So in the South, you had these people that were making money and supplying black people resources, and, you know, in Jim Crow, that was almost unheard of. Mm-hmm. So you had a power dynamic where people had to take care of that.
Okay.
And Ida B. Wells really broke the story on that.
Mm-hmm. So what have you guys been doing locally? You know, we've been seeing a lot, you know, Black Lives Matter pops up in the national news all the time. And I mean, some, of course, both the good and the ridiculous, you know, especially ex-Mayor Giuliani, and Rush Limbaugh calling Black Lives Matter terrorist organization. I mean, what planet do these guys live on, you know?
I don't know, but Giuliani is just execrable, man. And I know he was part of the
he's
a suspect.
You know, there's been a lot of, I mean, and man, I'll tell you what, you know, for me, seeing the Black Lives Matter movement come on the scene, I mean, it's been such a dynamic influence just in this last few years on everything, right? From political candidates running for public office to you name it.
Super Bowl halftime shows.
And so anyway, what do you guys been doing locally here?
Oh, there's been a lot going on locally. I mean, what's been continuous for us is, you know, this effort to connect and involve more black members of our community into the work that we're doing, and also figuring out what the issues are for black community members. And that is a struggle, because when it comes to, you know, attending meetings and events and things like that and relating that to labor, I mean, people have to work. You know, a lot of black people are working non-standard hours.
Yes.
And can't come to a meeting.
Yes.
So that's been a continuous struggle of ours, and we've specifically devoted our work to that particular issue.
Well, that's a problem we have right here at WEFT, where it's very difficult to get any blue-collar people involved. For one thing, many of them don't understand it. And number two, you know, between the soccer practice or football practice and whatever with the kids and the jobs and all, because, you know, you can't, like, you worked at a bumper factory, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, you can't just do your part of the bumper whenever you can get there. You know, you just can't leave and go to a meeting or something. And it is really difficult in this society currently for any blue-collar people to organize.
That's great, though. It sounds like the local chapter is doing something that I haven't seen too often over the course of all my 59 years living in this community, is actually actually having involvement of both university-related people and actual people that live and work in the community, which, you know, back in the 60s into the early 70s when they allowed the urban uprisings and the anti-Vietnam War protests were going on, there was a lot more fluidity between the university and the community because for one, college education was very cheap back then compared to now. So this is great. I've been seeing this, you know.
Yeah. And I think, Urbana-Champaign has a history of that. Like you were saying, 60s and 70s, you had influx of students coming in, and because of the racist practices of the university, you had a lot of Urbana-Champaign community members opening up the homes to the students.
Mm-hmm.
And so, understanding that higher education, the institution of Illinois and just the higher education practice in general is really divisive when it comes to, building walls between community and students. And I think there's a few groups that we're working with to kind of dismantle this system where there's even a difference between community members and college students. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, it's all black. It's all, you know, us.
Okay, folks, it's about 30 minutes after the hour, about half past the hour. And we're going to take a little musical break here with some Bob Marley. Get up. Reminding us of something we need to do.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's a cord that Peter is cold.
Some public service announcement here today from 2 to 4 p.m. Join the anti-war and racism effort AWARE for its monthly anti-war demonstration in downtown Champaign on the corner of Main Street and Neal. And tune in this Saturday and every Saturday from 2 to 3 p.m. for Not Another Sports Show with host fellow worker Neil Parthen on 104.5 WRFU and live at WRFU.org. Also, tune in this Sunday and every Sunday from 4 to 5 p.m. for Labor's World View TV at Comcast Channel 6 and live at UrbanaPublicTelevision.org. This Sunday is part one of the documentary, The Corporation, followed next Sunday on the 9th by part two. And then in 2 weeks from this Sunday, there's going to be a panel discussion about the proposed quarter-cent sales tax referendum our guest today, Kadeem Fuller, James Kilgore, and Martel Miller. Also, to let you know, this coming Tuesday, October 5th, there's going to be a public forum at the Champaign Public Library in Robeson Rooms A and B from 6:45 to 8:45 is the sales tax, a jails tax. let you know, too, that the Building and Rebuilding the Labor Movement, a three-part course offered by the University of Illinois Labor Education Program and sponsored by the Champaign County AFL-CIO, will be happening coming up this week as well. There's going to be three classes over the course of 3 weeks. The class one is The Rise and Fall of the Workers' Power on October 5th. Class 2 on October 12th will be Current Attacks on Workers' Union and the Labor Movement. And class 3 on October 26th is Where Do We Go From Here? This will be designed for rank-and-file members and leaders of Champaign County Unions, and the course will combine short slide and multimedia presentations with in-depth group discussion. If you want to find out more information about those classes, you can contact the Labor Education Program and the School of Labor and Employment Relations, 504 East Anthony and Avenue Champaign, and the number is 217-244-4091. That's 217-244-4091. Okay, so
we got a couple here. The IMC Gallery space is looking for local artists for shows. The space is located in the lobby area, so the work will have a good deal of visibility. They are currently taking proposals for shows as part of a monthly gallery rotation. Preference will be given to collaborative work or artists wishing to exhibit a single project or body of work. They are open to all media. Submit proposals to travis.hocut@gmail.com. That's Travis, capital T, then lowercase R-A-V-I-S, period, H-O-C-U-T-T at gmail.com. I would assume they have a website with some information on it, too. And in just 10 minutes, you can make arrangements to donate your car or recreational vehicle to WEFT. Running or not, as long as you have the title, the Center for Car Donations will arrange a free tow when you call 877-411-3662. They do the paperwork. You get a tax write-off and help keep WEFT programming on the air. Call 877-411-3662 to donate your vehicle to WEFT Community Radio. That's 877-411-3662. And I'm sure if you do a internet search for the Center for Car Donations, you'll be able to find some information on that.
Okay, all thanks, right. Bill. Just to let listeners remind you, you're listening to the World Labor Hour on a listener-supported community radio station in Champaign, Urbana. And so we're coming back with our two guests.
And by the way, folks, cash is king. So if you got some cash, we'll take it besides cars, too. Don't ever forget that. You can go to our website, wef.org, and donate. Sorry, Dave.
Back to our guests, Kadeem Fuller and Evelyn Reynolds of the local Black Lives Matter chapter. The time we have left, I'm just going to kind of let you guys talk about what you want to get across to the listeners today about the Black Lives Matter movement. And I love that it's a movement, not a moment, by the way. About what's, you know, what they need to know as far as nationally as well as locally.
Okay. Locally, we really want to stress the fact that we are having a interest meeting for people who are interested in doing this work. We are transitioning to a black only space, so we do have accomplished meetings, but we really want to make sure that we are intentional about the space that we're creating and making sure that black people come in and feel at home and really, you know, really able to organize the way that sometimes we really need to, well, we always need to organize. So the first interest meeting will be Monday, October 3rd at the Champaign Public Library, Conference Room 215, from 7 to 8 p.m. And then we have Tuesday, October 4th at 12 to 1 p.m. at the Bruce D. Nesbitt African American Cultural Center. We have another one on Wednesday, October 5th at the Champaign Public Library Pavilion C from 2 to 3. And we also have Thursday, October 6th at 12 to 1 p.m. at the Urbana Free Library, the Satterwhite Room, the ground floor. And Friday, October 7th from 5 to 6 p.m. at Bethel AME Church. And the last one is Saturday, October 8th at 1 to 2 p.m. at the Douglas Branch Library. We also have some accomplished meetings on Tuesdays and Thursdays. So I think that's really important to let people know that we were kind of just working on internal things for a few months, but now we're really ready to kick the, to, you know, get back to what we're doing, our organizing, direct actions and things like that. So please, if you're interested, please come out to our interest meetings.
Wow, that's a lot of meetings. I mean, yes. What's great about this, it seems that you're providing a lot of opportunities for people out there, both location and days and times. And that's something very unusual, at least in this town.
Yeah, I think that's the point, just to get as many people as possible, understanding that we were just talking about labor, so making sure that our times can sometimes, you know, people are working, so creating a space where people can come in, and also trying to bridge that gap between community activism and also campus activism.
Another project that we are continuing to work on, but with a little more force and activity now, is our education project, specifically focused on Unit 4 at the moment. And we have some great accomplices working with us, and accomplices are non-black folks that are working with us, and I want to definitely shout out the Booker T. Washington Equity Committee with Jennifer Enoch, one of our great accomplices that's helping with that work. And we have been meeting with school administrators, district administrators, superintendents, and other folks in positions of authority throughout Unit 4. Jennifer has created a proposal for what the BTW gifted program could look like in order to make it more equitable, because there's really huge, significant disparities in black student access to gifted programs. And, of course, there's lots of racial inequities and suspensions, expulsions, disciplinary actions, et cetera, in all of our schools, not just Unit 4 schools. So we're continuing with that work. We actually have a WEF podcast series where we're talking about Unit 4 on several of those podcasts. And we have a new one that's going to be coming up pretty soon, so look out for that. So we're very, very involved in the work with education on the K-12 level, as well as building those relationships on the college level as well with Parkland and UIUC.
How do people get to those podcasts?
I think they are run throughout the week, kind of in between segments throughout the week. They're 5-minute chunks, and there are some other podcasts that are operating on the same kind of frequency. But ours is called the Black Lives Matter mixtape podcast.
Yeah, I believe. I'll tell you what. I'll look up the WFT website, and
they are on. I think they're on the website archive.
That's
somewhere.
Right. Yeah, there are archives. See, they're podcasts, and they're also probably. I believe they're putting them out on things like iTunes, SoundCloud, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, I think Sandra Athan is making sure that those are kind of posted in different places.
Right. So you might look on those at iTunes for what would the title be? That you would search.
Ours should be called the Black Lives Matter mixtape podcast. I don't know if that's been modified at all in different areas, but ours is called the Black Lives Matter mixtape podcast.
Okay, so you might look for it at iTunes and look on the WEFT website.
Definitely.
And it's kind of hard to navigate in some ways. You have to look around a lot. We hope to improve that soon. But yeah, definitely they're probably – definitely good things to download.
You know, speaking of Unit 4 and the gifted program, I don't think it's unique to Unit 4, but boy, I'll tell you, I mean, it's a cruel joke. I mean, I don't know whether a term to use. I mean, it's definitely, I mean, when you look at the kids that are in the gifted program, I mean, it's racial and classist. I mean, you see the patterns of the children that are in the gifted program. You can pretty much see, you know, when you look at where the addresses, where they're from. I mean, it's this is something I think definitely needs to be addressed. And discipline problems, you know, my wife works in the public schools, and for her, it's a really tough issue. I mean, I've asked her about this before, and she says what happens a lot of times, she says what normally the worst cases of discipline usually involves children, whether they're African American or, you know, white, that come from broken families. I mean, that's a big part of it, you know. But I mean, the thing is, if you're seeing other things as well, I mean, I think that needs to be addressed.
Yeah, and with our meetings with school board administrators, they have actually mentioned that quite a bit, and it almost seems like that's kind of an excuse for them to not do some of the things that I think they should be doing at the school level, is that they're saying, well, you know, these children are coming from broken families, or mm-hmm. their parents don't have time to engage with them and help them with their homework, and all these sorts of things. But I think that the school environment can be separate from, you know, the home environment, you know. Thinking about King School in Urbana, even how they cut their program for snacks, their mm-hmm. snack program, which was helping a lot of children at mm-hmm. that school that didn't, you know, that weren't, were skipping meals and things like that. And so I think there's a lot of strategic things that schools could do to help remedy some of these mm-hmm. issues. The home environment is only a piece of this. And all people have things going on at home. And, you know, we all have our issues that we still manage to learn.
Sure.
In advance. And I think that the black
But you're seeing, obviously you're seeing some, supported by data. A lot of disparities, basically.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I can read a few of those, things. 75% of all suspensions in Champaign District 4 schools and 65.8% of all suspensions in Urbana District 116 schools were black students.
Wow.
77.7% of all expulsions in Champaign District and 85.7% of expulsions in Urbana's district were black students. And then it goes on and on with disciplinary actions, and things like that. And in BTW in particular, thinking of social class, that's a school that has, I believe, about 70% of the students that go to that school are classified as working class, mm-hmm. Or low income.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at the gifted program, it's probably 3%, I think, of those students are in the gifted
My wife program. Used to work
that's,
as,
that's predominantly black.
My wife used to work as a secretary at BT Washington up until just last October. And, some of the stories she has.
So yeah, I think it's really, really much systemic. The issue when it comes to broken homes, broken families. I mean, that when you look at just the fact that it's a systemic issue, I think that argument kind of diminishes. Just, and the stats were prepared by, Build Programs Not Jails. Just wanted to shout them out. But I mean, and these educational stats, unfortunately, we've seen throughout the country for years. So it's kind of like, you know, our kids are not getting the same treatment, the same education, the same resources as other students.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Those are some shocking figures. I mean, wow, 75%, 85%. I mean, and the population in Champaign-Urbana, the African-American community, is what, about 15%, pretty much the national average?
Yeah. Yeah, so we've been going to school board meetings too. We've started to attend school board meetings because what we realized is that a lot of parents aren't, and community members aren't going to those particular meetings. You know, we show up mm-hmm. for the city council and the county board, but there's not a lot of people showing up at the school board meetings, and they have a lot of power, those school mm-hmm. board members. So it's really important to kind of engage with them. And one of the things that I posed at the last school board meeting, you know, I brought up the referendum that they're going to have on the November 8th ballot, you know, asking for over $180 million for facility improvement. And I said, you know, why should black parents and black people support a referendum like that, you know, to improve schools that are disenfranchising black students, you know? And so there's things like that to also consider.
So you're having regular meetings with the school board, or is this sort of on a semi-regular basis?
Yeah,
or?
I mean, we're having regular meetings, and I must say, you know, the current superintendent, Judy Wiegand, she's wanted to have monthly meetings with us. And so there has been some effort, you know, mm-hmm. to continue the conversation and take some active steps to make things better.
Also, we talked about it briefly, but the bill programs, not jails, working with BLM and a lot of other campus and community initiatives and organizations is the fight against the public facilities referendum. So that's something that we're really trying to fight. I know, Dave, you have a lot more information, but I'm just wanting to bring that up and saying BLM is really passionate. BLM is also working with that coalition to struggle with collectively against the referendum, the prison or the jail mm-hmm. Referendum.
Yeah, that's basically, that's a whole issue we could talk a lot about. I was shocked to see that. I'm sure you guys saw this too. The News Gazette even has come out against, it's obviously it's a jails tax. I mean, I was surprised to see the News Gazette hitting it right on the head when they were saying that basically, we're supposed to distrust the county board. There's no specifics on this referendum, how the money's going. It's going to be up to their discretion.
Well, I want to say too, I don't live here. But that is a tax that I would pay because I do quite a bit of shopping here.
Mm-hmm.
I spend quite a bit of money in this town.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't really want to help pay for a jail.
Yeah.
And I think that the type of tax is important. This isn't a property tax where people that make more money
right.
and have higher
mm-hmm.
property taxes are going to be the ones that bear the brunt of this. This is a sales tax
yes.
that everybody has to pay. And so who's going to be most, you know, impacted by this? Poor folks.
And yeah,
they tend to be people of color.
Yeah, so that'll up our sales tax to 10%. Because I think now it's 9.75%, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, and you know, lower income people spend a huge proportion of their income
spend it as opposed to well-off people and wealthy people. So it is a much more regressive tax. You might say, oh, well, it's just a flat tax. Everybody pays it. No, low-income people pay a much higher
proportional to their income.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think also it's important to know that in this county, black people are 13%.
Okay.
But in the prison population, we're over 70%. And
wow.
So when you look at the fact that we're literally paying for our own oppression, because when you build a jail, when you build a prison, you're going to put black bodies in there. So it's really complex. It's a complex issue that it needs to be, you know, broken down, because there's a lot of different conversations around the fact that you have the mental, well, not mental health, but you have the nursing home tied into this referendum. So it's a lot of different things that the county board has kind of created that will cause division and rift between community members.
In essence, they're holding the very popular public county nursing home hostage.
Right. Exactly.
And we're actually kind of as a summation to the anti-jail tax campaign, BLM is having a rally on October 29th at Douglas Park from 1 to 3 p.m. And we've invited members of Black Lives Matter Chicago, Black Lives Matter Gary to join us. We hope to have, you know, several speakers to talk about this issue, music. There'll be a DJ there.
That's on Saturday,
so
right?
So definitely come out. Yeah, Saturday, October 29th from 1 to 3 p.m. at Douglas Park.
Great.
Okay, I was wondering, too, do you have a website or anything like that, Facebook pages, so on and so forth, various ways, information?
Yes, we have a Twitter account, BLM_CU on Twitter. We have a Facebook page, just put in Black Lives Matter, Champaign-Urbana. We also have a website, a WordPress website, which I can't think of the exact address right now, but it's a WordPress blog website, and so if you put that in Google, it'll pop up. Other social media accounts, is that all of our social media accounts currently?
So, okay.
Yes, our email, our Gmail, blacklivesmattercu@gmail.com.
Okay, so if somebody would do a search for Black Lives Matter CU, then they would probably pop up with all kinds of different ways to find out about you and communicate with you.
You know, there's something else going on Saturday a year. In fact, I'd like to get, if you could send that to me, I'd love to keep announcing it over the air between now and then. That Friday, right before your event, I guess, there's going to be a huge protest at the College of Law on the U of I campus here against a guy named Harold Koh, who's the legal architect of U.S. Crimes Against Humanity. He's also was Hillary Clinton's attorney when she was Secretary of State and is on her campaign. He's going to be speaking at the law school, and so there's going to be people coming to rally against his him being here. Basically, Harold Koh, you're not welcome. It's going to be Friday, October 28th, the day before your event, at 11:30 a.m. at the North Courtyard of the Law Building on, let's see, that's 504 East Pennsylvania Avenue, and also Peabody Drive as well. It's on both sides, you know, takes up the whole block. So that kind of leads me into a question about this exponential increase in not just police murders, but the militarization of the police that we've been seeing. How much do you think this ties in with all these wars of, you know, going on for the last 15 years, you know, in Iraq, Afghanistan? Do you think there's a connection?
I think there's a U.S. connection as far as supplying, arms and things for many of the conflicts taking place around the world, training, especially thinking of Palestine, the Palestine-Israel conflicts, and how the U.S. has backed Israel in many ways in that regard. So I think the U.S. government is implicated in a lot of ways in a lot of these conflicts. And we do see that playing out at home where people are having peaceful protests for wrongs, outright blatant wrongs, murders that have taken place. And you see police showing up with military gear, with tear gas, shotguns, you know, just, it's crazy. When I see those images, it seems fantastical. It seems like a surreal, you know, reality, a different world to see police, you know, like that. For at peaceful protests.
Where they look, a lot of them look like RoboCops, you know, the way they're dressed up.
I definitely equate military to just a globalized police force. The fact that a lot of times when the U.S. Forces invade or go into a country, is usually a country of color, colonized spaces. So yeah, I think there's definitely a direct contact, connection, especially when you look at the fact when Ferguson had the uprising, you had a lot of parallels between militarized police getting the same training as Israeli apartheid or Israeli police and military, when it comes to occupation of Palestine. So just those same, just those same connections are fluent and really real and complex.
Earlier, Kadeem, you mentioned that this was a systemic problem, this whole, this, this rash of, police murders and stuff, basically because of the police are, you know, they're getting off with, you know,
impunity. Well, it's basically a prerequisite to have military service in your background to be a cop. And if you've been over in Iraq and Afghanistan kicking down doors and just shooting whoever you feel like, or, and being told all the time that everybody is a threat.
Yeah.
And then you come back and they keep telling you everybody is a threat. You know, today on my way here, I saw a guy with a car and had this huge sign in the back window. My son is defending us or something. What's yours doing? And I just felt like it was at the gas station, but they're pulling out and all that. I just wanted to go over and tell you, your son isn't defending anybody.
Right. Except corporate America.
Your son, yeah, and is enforcing the will of the establishment, the deep state,
the 1%,
Israel, that Saudis and corporate, the world corporations and NATO and everybody else, but they're not defending anybody.
Yeah.
They're aggressors.
Right. Yeah, and it's amazing. I mean, obviously, you know, the fact that police are getting off with impunity with obvious murders, how the police are being militarized, and how they're actually preferring to hire veterans, combat veterans, and encouraging this whole mentality of a, of an occupation army. Obviously, it sounds like the ruling class in this country, the 1%, are worried about what's coming, and that they basically are trying to frighten and intimidate the working, you know, people of this country.
Mm-hmm. And the global, you know, what's happening globally is happening nationally. It's a reflection because we're so interconnected in today's age. And so, you know, who are those victims? Who are the people that, you know, the U.S. military is going after and harming?
Mm-hmm.
They're people of color.
Mm-hmm.
They're Muslim. You know what I'm saying? And the same thing is happening here in the country. Who are the people that are being murdered, that are being, you know, discriminated against? It's Muslims. It's people of color. You know what I'm saying? And so it's very similar.
And actually, this comes down to economics too, as far as jobs, right?
Definitely.
I mean, you know, they love to talk about, you know, it's out of control in major cities like Chicago. There's all these shootings and everything else. Well, we all know that this is all, most part, involving the illegal drug trade. I mean, and as we know too, when people lose jobs or they've been convicted of minor offenses that are felonies, they go to prison, they come back, they can't find work, they can't get public housing. What are people supposed to do to survive? And you got this, you know, huge underground economy, and there's no way to settle disputes in a court. If somebody rips you off in a drug deal, you can't take them to court and sue them.
Exactly.
You know, so I mean, this, I think it has an economic component. And, you know, of course, we could then go into a whole thing of neoliberalism and all that, you know.
Well, I'll give you an example. My sister in the 1970s had a job working for the Department of, whatever, corrections, mm-hmm. whatever they call it here in this state, taking ex-cons out, people who were being released, taking them out to look for jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't like going to local 703 because the business manager at the time thought he was God's gift to women and kept hitting on her. But is there a program like that now? After the backlash, the cultural and political backlash of the late 70s and 1980s, I doubt it.
Mm-hmm.
And what about people getting educated in college? I heard on the previous show, the News from Neptune, a statistic that there would be 98% of people will be getting out of prison.
Exactly.
Only 2% are going to die there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been a constant criticism of prison educational programs. You know, why should I pay for somebody else to get a degree in prison? I am so sick of hearing this kind of thing coming mainly out of the mouths of white working class people.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, Dave, it's getting close to the end of the hour. It's 11:58.
Yes, I'd like to thank Evelyn Reynolds and Kadeem Fuller for coming on.
And
yes,
and we need to take a little musical break here so that there is a break for shows like our wonderful friends at Chiampa Weed Radio. That's look up Chiampa Weed Radio. Just do an internet search, and you'll find out more about them and their wonderful programs. And they run this program 4 times a weekend.
And then accuse you of attacking them.
My brothers and sisters, we have to put a stop to this. And it will never be stopped until we stop it ourselves. This is American democracy. And those of you who are familiar with it know that in America, democracy is hypocrisy. Now, if I'm wrong,
democracy is not hypocrisy, then don't put your hands on me.
This time the revolution will be televised. Yeah. Broadcast live through Mandela's eyes. Sparked by the speech of Martin. Blocks rally in the streets, they marching. The greedy banks die a thousand thousand. By any means necessary, Malcolm X. We locking arms from Boston to Compton. Risking arrest to get the mission accomplished.
What we fighting for?
We fighting for our kids' future.
Against who?
Against the sons of J. Edgar Hoover.
From the Great Depression
to the Great Recession.
This is the home of the brave.
Where's the great redemption? Homeland victory. Joan of Arc refused to move, think Rosa Parks. Super rich Warren Buffett said tax the wealthy. Citizen militia Prince Machiavelli. Heartbreak Hill, we ain't built to lose a marathon. Assalamu alaikum, Louis Farrakhan. From the roof.